Live from the Ghost Hunter Store. Brought to you by the Shadowlands, the South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show.
Good evening.
As soon as I figure out how to shut down the,
Live from the Ghost Hunter Store, brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts,
one more time.
Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
There we go. Got that figured out. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show again. It's not the same if we don't have one technical difficulty.
You started your holiday early, huh?
It's just iced tea right now.
Okay.
Last week we were doing. We went through half of the witness questionnaire that we use, kind of explaining why we ask certain questions and going to some of the behind the scenes answers that you look for. I think that most people might not be, realize, the reason why we ask the questions to begin with, or realize how much you can really find out. Before I get into that, though, I wanted to thank everybody that came out to the Ghost Hunter Store last Saturday for our grand reopening. We have expanded into the building next door, so we now, the whole store consists of two circa 1792 houses, all three floors, and we had a special guest out here, Brian, Chris, Brooke, and Carrie Ann from Scared, and we had quite a few other people from local groups, had some travelers, someone from Virginia.
Yeah, we had a couple people in from different states come to visit us.
So I think the total was 150 people that were here. So we'd like to thank everyone for joining in that celebration. We'll have to think of another way to, fit in our kind of party like that here.
Yeah.
It was nice to get everyone to get together, everyone in, like, the field, and not necessarily talk shop, but just to socialize.
Just have a good time, yeah, and be a good way to thank all our customers and everything for the years,
Now, I do have a little rant I wanted to go on. Before we get started, too.
All right, then I'll just sit back here.
It started last night when I was on Facebook, and I noticed someone posting it had a picture of a cow or a bull with a red slash through it, and and it was the no bull sign.
Right.
But it was referring to the Haunted Collector TV show, which is the new show on Sci-Fi with our friends John Zaffis and Brian Kano. Right. And I started reading some of the posts, and within the second post, there was already name calling, and I lost my temper a little bit. I can't say I've said nice things about every show, but I realize that it is a TV show,
right?
About all the shows. First of all, none of this stuff that you see in 45 minutes when you subtract out the commercials is happening necessarily in real time. They aren't still working behind the scenes during the commercials. It's filmed in advance many, many hours a day. I know most of the film
shoots...
Sometimes
it takes a week or so for some of those films.
For one episode.
Yep.
When we filmed for a trailer for here at the store, it was two 10-hour days of filming for a five-minute trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, if you just do the math, you figure out how many different, or how long it's going to take just to get one 45-minute segment of a show,
right,
and put it all together, what gets cut out. They leave a lot of the stuff out. When people are saying that they don't do this, they don't do that, that they do that in real life. It's the same thing with any of the shows you watch with the groups doing investigations. You don't see every detail of the investigation. So when you are watching it on TV, you are seeing the portion that the director and the producers thought was entertaining,
mm-hmm,
not what necessarily makes sense to a paranormal investigator.
Yeah, John's been doing this far too long to leave anything out.
you know, I'm sure there was a, you know, there's people in all different fields who watch, you know, cooking shows, the auto, you know, mechanics, you know, where they build the custom cars, anything, you know, they sit there and yell at the screen too because they, you know, they think that's not real.
Right.
It's TV. It's entertainment. But when you start getting down to the point where you're name calling and being disrespectful, first of all, you're showing your ignorance that you claim to be in the field, yet you don't know who someone like John Zaffis is. Who he's been doing this, you know, longer than mostly anybody you could find, and the depth of which he has gone into this.
Mm-hmm.
He's a demonologist. He goes into the, you know, the worst of the worst cases. He worked with his uncle was Ed Warren. He worked with Ed and Lorraine on numerous cases. He has his own group.
Mm-hmm.
People across the world will turn to him for advice. And I know everybody I meet when we realize, I know I call him a mentor. Everyone else is calling him a mentor, too. You know, he's the guy that you call up. Yeah, I've been doing this like 20, 25 years. He's been doing it 40 years. There's always someone's going to do it longer than you, but he's the go-to guy to bounce stuff off of because chances are he's seen it before. And he's going to give you, you know, a dose of reality along with some good advice there.
Right, and this is not his first show. I mean, how many shows has he been on because of who he is, you know, because of what he knows?
Plus, behind the scenes, I got, there's a video out. It's called John Zaffis, The World Within. Actually, this Scared crew filmed this and produced this. This is available out there. It's basically spending like a month in the life of John, and hearing some of the tales and things directly from him. And I can tell you, as someone who sat down and picked his brain and visited him at his house and, you know, gone on cases with him, this is just as good as, this is, if you can't meet him in person and sit down and talk to him, the video is the next best thing,
mm-hmm.
along with his book, Shadows of the Dark. You just want to read some of that stuff. Actually, it's required reading for people in my group. It's one of the books that we ask everyone to read because it gives you a real good insight of what you could potentially be getting into. And it really, I've calmed down a lot, but it struck a nerve with me that the people were really just bashing the show and berating the people on there when they have no idea, you know, what they're doing themselves. And it shows by their lack of knowledge of basically who they are, what they were doing. There was people on there calling them thieves, saying they just said stuff was haunted so they could take it and add it to their collection. You know, the haunted museum thing, I don't bring this stuff home. We take stuff from people's houses. We don't bring it home. We have it disposed of or take it to clergy or do other things along with the bindings and everything else. You know, John is taking that stuff into his house before he had the museum built in the back. He had converted part of his house over to store this stuff to keep it safe.
Yeah, so then it ended up in somebody else's hands.
In the wrong hands.
Right.
Just like his uncle did, you know, for years.
Right.
Ed Warren has had a museum that's now, you know, being cared. I assume his other nephew is taking care of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the family's been doing this for years and years. And it was meant to keep these items that have stuff attached to them out of the general population from affecting anybody else. People were saying on there, why don't you just bless it? Any priest can come out and bless it, and then they could just keep the object, and it's fine. If you notice, most of the people don't want the object anymore, first of all.
Right.
They want it gone. And if it was as simple as just going out and having a priest bless something and that was it, the problem solved, you know, most of us wouldn't be doing this. There would be no radio show. There would be no Para-X network.
There'd be no investigation.
Because everything would just be fixed.
Yeah.
It'd be that easy. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that, and
the people on the show signed up to do this show because, and they knew what was going to happen. They knew their objects were going to be removed, or they wanted them to be removed, so please come do the show and take my objects with you for the show.
And of course there's going to be stuff removed. It's called Haunted Collector. That is the object of the show.
Right.
Just like there's going to be stuff brought into the pawn shop on Pawn Stars, and people are going to sell stuff for, and he's going to pay half of the value for it, because he's got to resell it.
Right.
You know, some people that are shocked by how he's ripping these people off by offering him such a lowball figure for it. It's reality, people. This is what really happens in real life. You're just seeing it all cut down to real short time to make it somewhat entertaining. Yeah, the paranormal stuff is the same way. You can't criticize any of the shows for stuff like that. Now, there's, yeah, I've had my disputes or my dislikes about maybe something they've done on the show or a procedure they've done on, you know, different shows. Mm-hmm. But I personally, I haven't seen anything on Haunted Collector that has done anything improper, wrong, or anything.
No.
And I wouldn't expect it, because I expect the people that are involved there, the caliber of the people involved there, that they wouldn't just do stuff for cheap theatrics and you know, a little bit of obviously you can see it's not
ratings,
not trying to get the ratings pushed by doing over sensationalized things that are obviously made up, you know, and you can tell that some of the other shows, maybe some that are no longer around, and that's the kind of stuff they were doing to try to boost the ratings, and people can see right through that.
Right.
But you know, to all the people who are just you know, get personal attacks on John and Brian and the rest of the Zaffis family there, you know, maybe you should read a little bit about the background and all the stuff that they've accomplished.
Right, and you're absolutely right, Karen. He does ask what they want to do with it, so they have the right to keep it or not to keep it on the show. Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, he's never going to, he's not walking in to just take stuff. Everybody that is criticizing, you know, check out one of the books, go read a bio of him, and, you know, basically hope that you can become, you know, a fraction of the investigator.
Third of what he is.
That any of them are.
Yeah.
All right, now I'm done. Yeah, Uncle John. That's right.
Yep.
Don't mess with Uncle John. All right. Now we can go to the questionnaire. All right. We left off halfway through. Where we left off was, has any religious clergy been consulted? This we ask because, first of all, it's a BS meter question, because if they say they're not really that, they're only curious, they're not really that scared, yet they haven't involved the clergy or maybe had the house blessed or anything, and all of a sudden, since the activity started, they now have had someone come out.
Right.
You know, that obviously is now a flag saying, okay, they're not really being truthful. They might be a little more scared if they're going down to the parish priest.
Mm-hmm.
We also want to know what that priest said, whether priest, minister, because depending, even within the same denomination, whether it's, even among, like, say, Catholic priests, there's a different way that different ones will handle it. Methodists, the Lutheran, all the Protestant religions, their ministers might deal with it a little bit different. So we can't assume how the priest is going to react, or if someone from the clergy didn't come out, we can't assume it's because they didn't believe them. We need to find out as much detail as possible.
Right.
There might be a valid reason that, especially if these people do go to church all the time, the priest might know more about the family and have reasons why he didn't go out, that he might, you know, let you know. I'd like to say that you're going to get a lot of cooperation. We definitely get more than we ever have, but there's still people that are going to not want to talk to you because of the nature of what we do. So the more professional you can approach it, and especially doing so with the blessing of the people and making sure that the clergy knows that the people are giving you permission to talk to them about it, the better off you are. Just calling someone up blind or, you know, walking up to the church and saying, hey, I want to talk to you about this, you're probably not going to get any kind of answer out of them.
Yeah, no answer at all. Yeah.
Let's see. Also, we want to know, if they have come out, what did they do? There's a lot of different things that...
Well, there's a lot of different versions or ideas of what a house blessing is.
Yeah, exactly. Even amongst the same denominations,
yeah.
I prefer to call it the obligation blessing, because they come in and they'll normally just bless the house by standing in one room, say a couple prayers that you can barely hear, throw holy water, and that's it, and they don't leave the living room.
Right.
That's technically not a house blessing. Yeah, that's something they might do for a business, you know, not, instead of walking through all the stock rooms and the back rooms. But a house blessing is room to room. And normally it's holy water in all four directions and certain prayers. I know the Episcopal Church, and I think that the Catholic Church even used to give out little plaques. I know when we had the store blessed, we got a little plaque.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some Protestant religions or evangelical, it's more of a prayer session, which all of this is good. It doesn't matter what it is, but you just need to know kind of what the approach was. And if the activity suddenly spiked right after, that's not a good sign.
Right. Or if it dropped off for 3 days and then spiked again. You
right.
know.
You're looking for patterns of activity that right. can make you think, okay. Or if it just settled down, too. I mean, sometimes it's the prayer is positive energy. That's what you're putting out.
Yeah.
No one's angry when they're praying, you know, or putting out negative energy. The whole purpose of prayer is to put that positive energy out. So you might actually clear out some of the negativity or some of this the jumbled mess that may be causing some of the
I have nothing activity. Else. It's a good place to start.
Right. You're not going to hurt anything.
No.
So all those details are very important for you to know. Next question. Has there been any media involvement? If so, who? I personally am very cautious if I find out that they've, unless it's been a long-going case, or it'd have to be very special circumstances. Mm-hmm. In most cases, if someone's contacted me for assistance, whether it's just curious or, you know, they're concerned, and they already have talked to some sort of media about their house at one point, I'm wondering what their motivation is. Are we going to wind up, you know, chapter in a book they're writing?
Right.
And we're going to be doing the work that they can't do because they don't have the equipment and everything, and we're finishing the book for them.
Yeah. Evidence in the next article, yeah.
And that happens. It hasn't happened as much recently. I'm going back many years now thinking of the last time, but we didn't even last time we were totally oblivious about the fact that they had a manuscript, because that wouldn't be something you'd know until after we were leaving. She kept wanting to get pictures of us, which, you know, happens from time to time, but the pictures were very specific, very staged photos of who she wanted in where. Mm. And it got to be more than like 10 shots, and I started saying, what do you need the photos for? And that's when she kind of like was, you know, trying to dance around it, but it was very apparent she was needed for the book.
Yeah, so if it's not for the book, and then she's going to become a stalker.
Right, so we basically wasted the night there doing an investigation because we weren't there to provide anything but, you know, help someone write a book. You know, it's different if they say something up front where you're helping someone to do a show or
right.
some project, and we have helped people do books or articles, you know, for magazines and things. That's different. You know what you're into. But for someone to hide that from you, that's being deceitful, and that's whole part of the, you know, you got to be completely open and honest with us from the get-go. So, without that, there is no helping. Have there been other in groups involved? Have you contacted multiple groups? I personally want to know what other groups have been involved before us, because I want to know what they did. I want to know if the activity got worse.
Yeah,
you know, afterwards.
And why are you contacting us after you contacted them? What happened to them?
Right. Chances are they disappeared and stopped answering the client's phone calls or emails now, or they ran out of the house. We probably, I'd say now it's probably about 20% of our cases a year with South Jersey Ghost Research wind up being what I call cleanup cases. These are cases that another group has gone in, probably before they've received any kind of training or had any business being in there, or were totally oblivious to how they should handle something, got in over their head, either made things worse or got spooked and just left the people hanging.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have to go in and we have to fix what they've done before we can even address what the original problem was. And that causes, you know, that just added time and heartache and headache onto an already complicated situation. So I'm cautious when they've contacted multiple groups.
Yeah.
Because once we get involved, I don't want to go out 1 week and then go out 2 weeks later and have someone slide in between us that we don't know about, going and doing things that we might not do, or, you know, one of the groups that we might eventually have to clean up after.
Yeah.
While we're out there actively involved in the case. I don't mind, there's times for you can team up with a group, you can work together, but to work the same case separately with another group is a bad idea. It's going to cause problems because you're not coordinating your effort.
Well, we had a case that they had a group go out before us, and when we asked them what the outcome was, it was high MF in certain areas. We picked up on the same thing. They gave them the same advice we gave them, so we didn't have to go out and do the investigation because they had all the information from the other group. They just needed to listen and pay attention to what everybody else was saying.
Right. I mean, we get the second opinion thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, too, but it's... That's, I guess, the lesser of all the evils.
Yeah.
You know, you want to watch out for the other groups that have really made something worse. Let's see. Have there been any other witnesses besides the occupants? It is rare, actually. I'll say rare. That outside people outside the house or everyone inside the house is experiencing something or seeing the same thing or the same event occur at the same time. There might be different things, but it's not usually everybody in the house. And people outside the house is even more unusual. So when you have a lot of people in the house, outsiders coming in, you have a very, very strong activity in the house. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean it's good or bad, one way or the other. No. It definitely, though, means that you need to be prepared for something, you know, probably stronger or at least more active than your typical spirit. Because this is willing to, this is up to the levels of the, you know, some of the famous haunts that people go to that you repeat, everyone experiences something.
Everybody sees,
Fort Mifflin or Waverly, Moundsville, places like that where it's consistently active. There's houses that are consistently active like that too. You just kind of need to know that this is what you're walking into. The more you can know about it, the more prepared you are. And I think these are things that you, like I said, in a lot of these. Explanations we're giving for these questions might not be the first thing everyone thinks of. Give you a little, you know, extra insight to why we ask the questions and why we do a whole follow-up on the questionnaire after we receive the questionnaire back. You also are going to want to talk to those people, or as many of them as possible.
Yeah.
The witnesses. The more witnesses, the better. Because they're each going to validate each other's story. And in the case that someone is actually trying to pull one over on you, the more witnesses, the better for you. Because it's harder to keep, it's whispered down the lane at that point.
Yeah.
It's harder for them to keep their stories together.
Exactly.
And I remember the last time that we actually caught somebody that was going this far, even through the interview process, of trying to pull the wool over our eyes. And, you know, that's what we wound up doing. We wound up bringing all the witnesses in, and we split them up into twos, and, like, you know, six of us went off and interviewed them all different. And we already had their previous statements, and they couldn't even keep them straight. So we let him go on for about like 10 minutes, and then they said, "You're lying to us. That's you know, it's we've had enough. We're out of here."
Or if the statements are all the exact same,
where they've rehearsed it, yeah, to the point where yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anything that's suspicious like that, once you do, if you follow the method that we do, where once you're contacted, you have them fill out a questionnaire, then you set up a interview with them. But to somewhere along that process, really, people who are trying to play games with you have dropped off.
Yeah.
Because they realize you're dealing with someone a little more serious,
yeah.
And they're not willing to, you know, do the poker face bluff during the interview. So that'll normally, they'll disappear. You'll never hear from them again.
Yeah, you're not going to do the investigation? Not yet. We have to talk to you first. And usually they'll say, oh, well, all right, well, we'll contact you, and that's the last you hear from them.
Exactly. Let's see. Odors. Sounds like a, you know, obvious thing. What you want to keep in mind are there are two ways to look at the odors, and they're two actually opposite ways. You have to look at them both ways, though. Odors, rule of thumb, a good guideline, good odors are good, bad odors are bad. You know, sulfur, excrement, you know, ammonia, like urine, you know, cat urine, stuff like that, that would be bad. Roses, you know, flowers, or something reminds you of a deceased loved one. Say, like, you know, smoke, but not fire smoke, but like right. Cigarette smoke or right. Pipe smoke. Something like that.
Or body odor. Sometimes body odor, but just because that's the way
right.
Uncle Joe smelled. You know.
If it's something that they can relate. Right. Odors and sounds are some of the easiest ways for spirits to communicate, but it's easiest for us to ignore them or to write them off in our head.
Right.
Now, the other way you want to look at it is completely the opposite way, where... Don't just go with the rule of thumb and say good is good, bad is bad. Because depending on the message that the spirit might be trying to send to you or what it's trying to relay to you, there's a good book, and I'm not going to tell you in case you didn't read it because it'll ruin the whole book. But it turned out these spirits that were giving off, it was the odor of decay and mm-hmm. death, they were actually trapped and buried under the house in a cave-in.
I've heard that, yeah.
And that's what they were also... getting on top of the people, or the people got the impression something was on top of them, pushing down mm-hmm. and crushing the air out of them. So something's crushing me. I smell the smell of death. It's right. bad. And it turns out it wasn't. These people were trying to, they didn't speak English. they were foreigners working here, so they couldn't, you know, you don't die and suddenly learn English, okay? Yeah. you know, your language. So they weren't able to, like, communicate with the people that were in the house.
And even if they were, the people might not have heard them. So.
Right, so they were trying to relay what was going on, and they're relaying exactly what it was like to slowly die in a cave-in, because they people died before them. They would smell the bodies rotting away, the last people alive. So you can't just always go by the rule of thumb, but as a good guideline, bad is bad, good is good, but dig deeper.
Right.
You also want the who, what, where, when, why, yeah, all that, all the details. You want to know where the smell is, what time, you know, all that stuff, as many details as you can, because you might see a pattern that they don't. The smell might always appear right around a certain time of the day, a certain time of the month, a certain area of the house, and that may make sense in the overall picture. Once you have, we have a question popping up there, but once you look at the whole overall big picture, that might make sense to where the smells were. Now, the question we got just popped up: how could another team make it worse for you? Well, we've had plenty of cases where we've gone in and the other team has just no idea how to deal with people who are, maybe, let's go with the people who are concerned to slightly uneasy about what's going on. This is actually an actual case that we did, and this is one of the best examples. They called a group out because the lady was very unnerved. She thought she had a ghost in the house. They did a little mini investigation for a couple hours. They walked around with a camcorder, videotaped some orbs. This group felt the orbs were spirits. So at the end, they did their big reveal. Instead of reviewing any of their evidence and going back and discussing it with everyone on the team, they decided, let's show them what we got now. So they play the video for the lady, and they say, look, you got 12 orbs, so you have 12 ghosts. You don't have just one. That was at 12 o'clock. We have an 800 number you can call to get in touch with us. On the 800 number, we have an emergency phone number that someone always has with them, a cell phone with them, 24 hours a day. By 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, that lady had left like two messages already on the emergency phone, and we were out there 11 o'clock the next morning. All because the other group didn't think, hey, if she's afraid of one, maybe telling her she has 12 and then going home and leaving her at midnight in her house isn't really the best bedside manner. Not to mention that we haven't reviewed any of our evidence, so we don't know what else we got or anything. I mean, we got an EVP that said, yes, there's only one of us here.
Yeah.
You know? Well, gee, I think that might have trumped the...
I was just in 12 different places when you took these pictures.
That might have trumped the dust you got on your video camera. So that's a very good example of how another group... Because I would say probably we're probably at 50-50 out there, if wishful thinking, that really have no idea how to handle or go into a private house.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking from being a client, from growing up and, you know, contacting someone for help. And they were scarier than...
Well, just from being in this store and working here in the store, how many people come in and say, I'm starting a group and I need equipment and I don't know what to do or where to go to get started, and then all of a sudden they're doing a client's house. That's just a little scary, too.
That's the main reason why, you know, not to do a shameless plug here, but the 14 Church Street training area we set up to be just like a house on the second and third floors here, the new section of the Ghost Hunter store, is an area where we're opening up to groups to come in, you know, for, you know, very, very little compared to what all these other places are charging.
Most definitely.
To come in and train, either with our help or without our help, but just to do it in an area that's haunted. It's set up like a house, and you can make all your mistakes here.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go and know what you're doing when you go into a private house. It is different than investigating, you know, a public place, a historical place, a cemetery. There are things you can and can't do, because you have to take into consideration, you get to leave at the end of the night. The people have to stay and deal with whatever you've done afterwards. And if you ever take one of my classes, you'll see that quote right there throughout the entire slideshow. It's in multiple places in my book, The Ghost Research 101, because that is the mantra, I guess, that I want to beat in everyone's head. You know, you get to leave. They have to deal with anything you stir up by provoking, by doing anything like that. Maybe it doesn't scratch you when you say scratch me, but maybe you aggravated it enough that it terrorizes the child in the house and scratches him. Now you have the parents terrified, the kid terrified, all because you wanted to try to get, you know, a reaction for your own benefit, not for the benefit of people. You know, it's only okay to go and investigate someone's house for your own benefit if they know that that's what it's, you're doing.
Right.
If they're contacting you for assistance, even if it's just curiosity, you're there for them, not yourself. Your hunt for ghosts, your hunt for the truth that life exists after death, all are secondary. The first thing is the people that live in the house.
If that's your big thing is research and, you know, trying to find out how to you know, find a ghost or whatever the case may be, then that's historic places or places like this where you can do just that, just research. Don't do that on a client's house.
Right. We're very adamant about that. We've actually cut off groups from even purchasing stuff here.
Yes.
That ran canceled shipments to people once we found out they were going to private houses. I'd rather, you know, lose that sale out than send somebody in to potentially, you know, hurt themselves. Mm-hmm. Sometimes this isn't fun. It is like work, and it can be very dangerous. And you know, you need to be aware of that too. You're playing with fire sometimes, and you don't want to ruin someone's life all because of your you know, your need to get, you know, an adrenaline rush or an orb photo or whatever, you know, whatever's driving you with that, you know, that moment.
Just think how long it takes these people to, you know, step out of their comfort zone to contact you to begin with to get this help. And for you to do something like that would ruin them. They wouldn't be able to get the help because they wouldn't trust anybody else to help them. And then they'd have to live with this. And it's not something that most people want to live with, the fear like that.
All right, we've rambled on long enough about that. Let's see, where were we? Sounds. Sounds very important, because people are going to tell you they hear whispering, they hear knocks, they hear scratches. Well, what your knock and my knock are probably not the same. Okay? A knock, to me, might be a tap to you, and a, you know, vice versa. I want them to reenact. I want to hear... When they say they hear pounding, I want to hear how loud it sounds. Pound on the table.
Right.
Show me and let them do the pattern too that they hear. Don't lead them on. You know, because if you know anything about, like, yeah, reading into the more negative cases, you're looking for patterns, numbers, like patterns of three. Mm-hmm. You don't want to lead them on to where they're thinking they're coming up with the answers where they're hearing three knocks, not four. You want to definitely have them act out, though, even with footsteps. Does it sound like it's a child? Does it sound like it's an adult? Does it sound like they are wearing work boots, sneakers, high heels? What does it sound like? That'll give you... I mean, if they say it sounds like a woman in high heels, that makes, you know, a big difference in if you get an EVP from a woman on the same floor.
Right.
Now that's you know, corroborating evidence that you wouldn't have if you didn't go into details and ask the questions. So with sounds, even the scratching, you know, anything.
Yeah.
Where does it sound like it's coming from? Does it sound like it's a mouse scratching? Does it sound like a person scratching? A cat scratching? Give me... So you go up the size of animals and stuff. Let's see. Voices. This kind of falls into the category. I'm sorry, we're going to get a live question here. Let's see. By the way, we are live this week. although when you're hearing this now, this could be a replay of a previous broadcast later on down the line, so
yes,
it won't be live.
Okay, we're live Friday night.
But we actually are, we actually do this out of the Ghost Hunter store, and we actually moved down to the floor of sitting on one of the nice Victorian couches here,
there.
So we get people coming in and out of here. Voices, too. You want to know what they said? Did it sound like, you know, old, young, male, female, whispering, loud, at a distance, you know, up close? Mm-hmm. All the intimate details you can think of to give you the most... So you want to be able to read the questions, such as the sounds, the odors, the voices, and you know enough that it's almost like you experienced it. That's what you want to be able to do. Let's see. Movement of objects. Movement of objects. Human spirits can relatively move, I usually say like 5 to 10 pounds is a safe bet. Now, that's not saying like the couch, they couldn't move it across the room because you're pushing. So just like you could do it in real life, you know, you're not picking the couch up over your head and walking it across. You're sliding stuff around. So within reason. Now, should there be multiple spirits? I know dealing with Native American spirits, they tend to team up and join forces a little bit. So they're capable of moving much larger objects. So that's possible with human spirits too. When you get into the realm of defying the laws of physics.
That's when things hang off the ceiling.
Right. Things are upside down and balanced in a way that's impossible. Things are put through walls, and I don't mean like they suddenly appear on the other side of the wall. I mean like they're embedded into a wall. I think of the one picture I show during the Preternatural class with the mirror.
Yeah.
It's like a plastic handheld mirror, but it's impaled through a sheetrock wall on both sides, and the mirror's not cracked and the plastic's not broke. So the velocity it would have been traveling to accomplish that. Anything that defies the laws of physics is probably a flag that you want to, you know, mark down. Because human spirits cannot defy the laws of physics. So, I know that, again, raises questions even in my mind, because there's things such as apports, which are objects that appear that don't belong. Well, if it appeared from another time, another place, and suddenly is out here, what do we attribute that to? Is that, you know, law of physics? You know, it definitely is that fine line.
That's a very fine line.
So, again, a lot of these rules of thumb are just that. They're guidelines to go by, but don't get locked into them. You got to be able to think outside of the box.
And take in all accounts of everything. Everything on the questionnaire, you have to take it all in order to make some kind of determination. And even then, you have to be really careful when you go in for the investigation, because it may appear to be that you know, Casper the Friendly Ghost. And that's exactly what they wanted you to think.
All right, we got some people in here that are going to, they want to ask us a question.
Okay.
So why don't you flip your mic around over there, and they can all talk just into that one. And then me and you will use this mic. This is technology at its best here.
What's your name?
My name's Jack. It's a pleasure to see you guys.
How you doing, Jack?
It's been a while since I've had the mic in my face. Right. I used to actually work at a radio station, so it feels natural to me. But, yeah, I got a couple questions. I think the first one I'm definitely going to start with is Ouija boards. Main topic.
Is this something you played with?
Yeah, and it's still in my closet, actually. And one of the times I used it, I did not close it. I did not say goodbye. So I think
who's this over your shoulder?
This is my mom.
Mom, Teresa.
She just gave the look when you're still in your closet.
Yeah, she walked in and she was like, what are you doing with this? So I was like, playing with it.
I will tell you that a large percentage of cases that wind up being negative entities, whether it's malevolent human spirits to demonic entities, use the board to come through. It's the way I describe it to people, kind of like to deter them. Yeah, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Is if someone's knocking at your door, you know, your front door of your house at 2 o'clock in the morning, are you just going to open the door and see who it is, or are you going to look out the window or the peephole first? Using the Ouija board, you're just going to open the door, and it could be anybody. You don't know who you're talking to, regardless of who they may say they are.
Right.
And that's when you become even more suspicious, because the more that they get you to use it, the more that you become trusting of it, the less they need the board to come through.
Right. And the more lax you get. Again, why not?
Right, your guard's down. You're not as concerned or suspicious anymore. So, while granted, it's cardboard and plastic. You wouldn't even need to buy one. You could draw one out in chalk. You could use a piece of paper and a cup. The ability is there.
The intent is there.
Right. So it's bad news.
Yeah, because ever since I started using that, I've definitely had some wacky stuff going, and I've dealt with spiritual stuff a lot, and I could definitely almost positively say it's not spirit. I would think it's more so demonic. because of certain things that have happened. It's definitely far from a spiritual kind of activity.
Give us like an example of some of the stuff you think that's...
Well, you know, you got a typical, like, for example, on a recording on my fiance's phone, you know, you got a chair moving, that's whatever, then you got tapping sounds, but it's like, with spiritual stuff, like, I'll just get a weird feeling or whatever, but with this, I get a silhouette figure inside of my brain, like, for some reason, my mind will just instantly activate an image of what's behind me, and this, I can see the silhouette in its place, and... Now, sometimes when I'm going up to my room, if all the lights are off downstairs, you know, I'm down there getting food or whatever, as I'm coming back, it's like, it's really weird. Like, I'll see a girl in, like, a white wedding gown, and she'll look nice, peaceful, and calm, but the second I turn around and see her, it instantly changes to, like, red eyes and razor sharp teeth, and it freaks me out that I run. But for some anonymous reason, even though the Ouija board's in my room, she cannot go past my door.
Yes, you know, I had that experience, too, growing up in my house. There were certain rooms that were off-limits. Because that's where I would run to, the middle bedroom, my parents' room. Everything else, even the bad stuff, stopped at that threshold. And there was nothing special in that room I could ever think of.
It's probably got something to do with the energy and the way the energy runs through the house. That the energy in that room just doesn't pick up enough negative energy. It's not in the right flow.
Right.
So it doesn't pick up the energy for it.
Are you still using the board?
No, I've actually stopped, but I don't know how to seal a portal, and I don't want to get rid of it, because I know what happens if you just throw it out in the trash and all that, so I kind of just been hesitant on what to do.
If you want a church?
I have a Ouija board. It's in the basement up on the shelf, and my husband and I have messed around with it.
So it could be either one of you that opened that portal. So that may be why she can't come through. Maybe she's not connected to that board, but she's connected to this board.
Probably the easiest way is, if you guys are close enough to here, you could always drop them off here and then we could take care of them.
Yeah, we are.
That would be what I would recommend. Yeah. When we go to do houses that have boards in them, mm-hmm. we usually ask to take them, because we won't do a case if they're going to keep the board. Because chances are, at some point, people will get curious again. And they might start using the board. And if they're doing that in between our trying to help them, mm-hmm. it's like they could be bringing more in while we're in the process of trying to help them. And we've seen it happen time and time again. So we normally will give it to clergy. And we have actually a few more contacts now to deal with. And they do bindings on them, and they'll destroy them. Yeah. We tell people not to do anything to destroy it. Because first of all, you're closing like that portal. But we've had this happen on two cases, and I can just personally remember the people's look on their face. You could tell that their minds were never going to be the same. They broke up the board and threw it away. They came downstairs the next morning and it was back and put back together intact, like a brand new board on their kitchen table. Yeah. Their mind is never going to heal from that. Okay, that's going to leave a permanent scar. So, you know, to avoid something like that, because, I mean, you'll totally be screwed up the rest of your life if you do something like that. So, with that... You know, destroying them or burning them is probably a bad idea.
Yeah.
We can also help you, too, if you wanted to fill out a questionnaire or whatever.
She already did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maureen.
Okay, she has it?
Yeah, I filled it out. I haven't given it to her yet.
Okay.
Because then you'll be meeting me and Marty and a couple of the other... We come out for specific, like, the more negative cases,
mm-hmm.
just in case. Because it still could be a human spirit. You know, if you think of everybody you've known in your life, there's a lot of, like, you know, jerks or really, like, hardcore pranksters.
Yeah.
You know? I know personally that there's, you know, should I become a ghost, there's some people I got some paybacks. So I might be scratching on the windows in the middle of the night and stuff like that. But, I mean, some people they might be, you know, malevolent
they
or just mess with you.
That way. The human spirits can make it feel like that, too, only because they're trying to scare you, all right? That's again, they keep their personality. So if you found one that's really nasty,
yeah.
and they, you know, they were in life nasty and scaring people, they're going to do the same thing to you. So they're going to give you that feeling.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to give you the good feeling.
Yeah, see, mm-hmm. I mean, we can't, just because it's the Ouija board, you can't just jump to the conclusion
right.
that it's going to be something demonic or bad. But, you know, that now that just opens the possibility that the potential is there. And it's not always the case. It's not always something that's demonic. But it's
for sure, yeah.
That's that. I mean, the only way for us to say for sure is, you know, going out and checking into it. That's what we tell people. Mm-hmm. And that it's better to be safe than sorry. And I'm glad you filled out the questionnaire already, because the sooner the better. You don't want the longer, if it is something that's negative, the longer it gets entrenched mm-hmm. into it, the harder it is to, you know, get out. So.
Yeah, and I probably didn't do too well, because I definitely fed it a lot of EVPs, a lot of bad ritualistic stuff, and
So from this point on, you want to stop all of it.
Yeah, I already did.
Well, okay. Basically, what you're doing is with any spirit, and this is why we tell people not to investigate their own houses. You might be curious to see what you got going on, but you're there 24/7. You're always in that house. You're giving it acknowledgement and recognition and energy by acknowledging it. And since you're the one, it's different when we come in. We're going to be in for a few hours, then we leave. Then our connection is gone. You're always there.
Yeah.
So it's always going to try to get you to do more and more, because it's feeding off of you. You become the energy source for it.
Right.
And then it becomes like a self, you know, fulfilling and continuing process where as long as you keep... we see people get addicted to the EVPs,
where
they just got to know, they got to listen more and more, and all they're doing is they're afraid of the activity, but they're enabling it to happen because they won't stop the EVPs.
Yeah.
Some people here, we either try to talk them out of buying equipment if they're doing their own house, or we give them our card, because you said you'll be calling us in about a month, and it never fails.
But something else that's a little strange, and like I really don't know how to explain this, because you know I found a lot of explanations, but it's like ever since I actually started dating her and like we got engaged and everything, it's like ever since we formed a good connection, like everything was kind of pretty much finalized, things started getting even worse. Only that, but when her and my mom went to her house, my mom right off the bat didn't like once she stepped on the carpet just like me, and went straight to her room just like I did, and said, you know, she doesn't like it, you know, yada yada.
I didn't let her tell me where her room was or anything.
And she put the EMF detector on her bed, and they asked if the spirit wanted her to take off the necklace that she bought from here for protection, and the thing just lit up. So I think they're either trying to get her to get at me, or it's just trying to get at both of us.
They try and isolate you, because if they isolate you, then they can break you down.
It's military, divide and conquer.
That's exactly.
If you get everyone thinking like that, everyone, that each of you are all against each other or don't agree, the more chaotic they can form, make the family. Because the only way to fight it is have everyone together. If you don't have everyone trying to fight it together, you can't.
Right.
So all you need is really one or two people to put it, you know, throw like a stick in the spokes, and that's all it tries to do. It's very subtle with stuff. It doesn't have to be full blown. People think when you're dealing with something that's negative or demonic, you're going to expect like the apparitions, or someone's going to show up with a pitchfork and the bat wings or something. It's the little stuff. It's the, if they can cause chaos in the house and get people fighting and arguing and all that stuff, then that's fine. That's a perfect attack. It doesn't need to do anymore, because we take over. We start doing the job ourselves, you know.
Sure. Well, you're breaking down the family, okay? So you're separating. Plus, you're dumping all that negative energy in that it can feed off of. So you're giving it both ends of what it wants.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at this point, you want to, if there's arguments, take them outside.
Yeah.
Leave them outside. Leave the negative energy outside.
Right.
And really, whatever it takes to stay together.
And even when you're discussing the activity in the house.
Yeah.
Go outside to discuss it. Don't discuss it inside.
Even if you're
the house.
On the phone talking with somebody, take it outside.
Right.
Yep.
Because you're giving it recognition now. It's impossible not to give it recognition without, you know, because you have to talk about it. But you don't want to do it inside the house. You want to step out.
Okay.
And that will take a lot of the. You know, these are just little tools you can use.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you get the questionnaire back to Maureen, we'll definitely we'll be out.
Oh yeah.
Could that also?
No,
go ahead. Keep going.
I'd rather you talk.
Well, all I was going to ask is, like, could that also, because, like, you can even ask my mom, you can ask her, like, I used to be the definite happy-go-lucky person, but now it's, like, for some reason, at random, moments and times, like, I'll flip out, and when I flip out, I'll flip out hard for no reason, and when I'm done and I'm back to calm, I won't even know why.
It changes, like.
Like, she says my eyes change and everything like that. It's kind of like I snap into another person.
Not like he's
possessed, but
right. You know, it's possession is people throw the word possession around too much. I think it's not.
Yeah, it's
there's
not
there's
like
stages
that.
Before possession that are that mimic what or almost identical what he's talking about. It's called oppression, mm-hmm. where it's like the violent outbursts that don't that seem they're not typical of the person,
right.
And they even with your their nose you're noticing facial feature changes or eyes changing, mm-hmm. where something's just briefly just overexert. Overlaying, I guess, their yeah. energy over top of his,
right.
making him do that, and then pulling back and is gone again.
Right.
It's almost like he becomes a puppet for a few minutes and that's it. So it's not possession, but it's considered oppression. But it's definitely another sign. But then again, human spirits
can
do that
thing.
Too.
Right. Yeah.
So it's still not definitive one way or the other.
Okay.
But it could also probably be, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but could it also be a tactic that could be used to help with divide and conquer?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because some people aren't going to realize that's not you.
Right.
They're going to think, well, you know, you're being an ass. or whatever. And it causes, you know, more arguments and more chaos in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not willing to believe that it's possibly outside influence, then that's a big win for it right there.
And it creates fear. Fear is a huge negative energy. Okay. Now you're afraid to get him upset because this is going to happen to him.
Right, you don't want
to
see him act out.
So that's a huge, huge negative energy. Plus it's something that's holding you away from him.
Uh-huh.
Again, you're separating. No matter what it is, it's not just the negative anger. It's also the fear that's pulling you guys apart from talking to each other.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah,
because that's definitely been a big concern. So, definitely happy I hopped on the mic now.
we'll be out to talk to you as soon as we get to send that back as soon as you can.
Yeah,
I'll be very happy for that. Yeah.
And bring the Ouija boards in as soon as you possibly can.
Oh yeah,
we're here tomorrow. We're here on Sunday. Drop
yeah.
them off.
Okay.
That way, that's one less thing you have to worry about
right.
with
yeah.
them. So,
well, on my Ouija board, I put a. Circle of protection on it, so
that's okay. Bring it in anyway, because obviously it didn't work.
Yeah. I know. I'm just saying. So, like, if you open it up and you look at it,
see if
it was me.
If you're the user and you're the one that actually enabled something to come through, you putting the protection on it really isn't going to have much of an effect.
You know what? I don't like you anymore.
When you're filling out the form, you can't exactly remember everything.
Filling
out the best of your knowledge.
Yeah, you won't remember anything. When we come back out, the first time when we get the questionnaire just to sit down and talk to you,
uh-huh.
what we do is we go over all the questions with you, and that's when we're going to get the other details.
Because
no one fills it out completely. Yeah, or they'd be books, you know?
I know.
So, and we kind of like, as we're doing the interview, we'll guide you through what the more important stuff is and weed through some of the stuff that's not as important. Because we're looking for specific things.
Okay.
I guess we'll be seeing you soon, then.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us on the radio.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Was a pleasure.
Very nice.
Pleasure.
See you soon.
Thank you very much.
All right. Since we have we got 5 minutes left, I'm going to stop. With the movement of objects, because actually, I still have a whole other page. I got 33 to 51. That can be another whole show. So the questionnaire show is actually going to go out to three episodes.
But it won't happen next week because we have
a
guest coming on.
I have given him a date. I'm not 100% sure because of travel plans, but we might have a special guest next week.
Tentatively, yes, we have a guest coming
from GHI. Let's just leave it at that.
You can all guess.
It was rescheduled. We had him scheduled before. Now.
And he's very much looking forward to coming on the show.
I know the last itinerary he had from the show, he had to be out of the States on the 11th of July. So that gives us just a couple days before he's getting ready. So he was able to do it at that point. I'll get a confirmation by mid next week and. It'll be up on our website, which is paranormalstraighttalk.com. Also, run down some of the websites here since we got a few minutes at the end. You can always get a hold of me and Marty at the Ghost Hunter Store, which is in Mount Holly, New Jersey, in Mill Race Village. We're open 6 days a week. You can get us on the website, too, theghosthunterstore.com. You can read our bios and find out more about the show on paranormalstraighttalk.com or on para-x.com, which is the radio network we are with. You can find us both on South Jersey Ghost Research's website, hauntedhelp.org or sjgr.org, on the Meet the Members section, little bio section there, and emails directly to us. You can also find me on theshadowlands.net. It's the web's original paranormal website, 17 years old this year.
Yeah.
And your address, do you have a shorter URL yet?
No, get on Facebook, on Angel's Wings on Facebook, or with the Ghost Hunter Store on Facebook.
Hey, it's Shadowlands on Facebook, the web or the radio show. Paranormal Straight Talk has a Facebook page. Plenty of pages for you to like. A little tip for you out there. When I put specials and stuff, we run special coupons and little, special ads and stuff. I always post them across the radio show's page, too. That might only be available to our friends on Facebook. So, we are going to get ready to sign off here. I'm just thinking, make sure we covered all our bases. Let me tell you to go out and get Shadows of the Dark. That's John Zaffis' book. And if you want to spend some quality time with John, but you don't have the time, you want to do it at your convenience and get all the same out of it, A Month in the Life of a Demonologist, John Zaffis, The World Within, DVD. Both are available at the Ghost Hunter Store, and I'm sure off of Scared Online. Mm-hmm. The DVD is available. The book, I would imagine probably Amazon, all the normal bookstores would have it too. It's definitely recommended reading and recommended viewing. And that's going to do it for us this week. And like I said, we will give you a heads up about our special guest next week, sometime during midweek. Thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot.